A few years ago, one of the kids in my online coaching program said to me, "Coach Rebecca, I wish we could just go to a gym and have you as our coach. We would all be so happy and so confident." And that warmed my heart, and I was like, "Oh my gosh, that would be the best." And that comment stuck with me for years. So now I'm going to do something about it. I am inviting gymnasts from all over the country to join me for the first ever Confident Gymnast Camp this August 3rd and 4th. This camp is all about breaking through mental blocks. So if you're struggling with a skill and you want me and my team to help you break through in real time, then check out confidentgymnast.com for details.
I started gymnastics in Florida, went to a small gym. My family relocated to Utah when I was 9, where Olympus Gymnastics was. Stayed there for all my club years. After that, went to Utah for 4 years. I had the best 4 years of my life. No matter how hard the coach was on me, I didn't have one coach who didn't believe in me and didn't reward my efforts. I think that's the most important thing, is for a kid to feel that. I definitely was coached out of the old school method, but it didn't bother me. I knew the expectations. I was a very obedient kid. I'm thankful that my mindset was okay enough to get through it. I was a gymnast. I did gymnastics. It didn't define me. After college, I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I was like, oh, I'll just start coaching to make money. When I got the job, I was like, I do not want to coach team. I'll coach rec. I'll do camps. They desperately needed a level 5 coach. And that's where I got the bug. I loved it. You help out the girls and they go shine on the competition floor.
What type of coaching works best for the athletes that you coach today?
I coach level 8, 9s, and 10s. They know the expectation, what they're there to do, giving them choices. Here's the assignment. I need this done. And hopefully they make the best decisions. Working hard here is popular. If you're not, then you're going to be called out by your teammates. Setting an expectation, but also giving them room to make mistakes, whether it's choices or just falling.
I really appreciate how you clearly put the humans first without sacrificing the excellence. What are some things that you as a coaching staff or as a facility are doing to continue to improve, or even you personally, year over year?
Individually as a coach, just making sure that
Hi guys, on today's podcast, I have the pleasure of interviewing Jessica McDonough, who's also known as Coach Jessie at Olympus. She is a former Utah gymnast who has been working hard to iron out the gym culture and take gymnastics from an old school coaching mentality to one that doesn't make things a big deal. She's always growing, always wanting to be a better coach, which I think sets a great tone for coaches who are up and coming. And she also just gives some great advice on how to allow things to be a little lighter and a little happier while still developing an incredibly high amount of excellence in the sport. Here we go. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Perform Happy podcast. My guest today is Jessie Duke McDonough, a former Utah gymnast who is now the co-head coach at Olympus Gymnastics. She's helped many young gymnasts make it to D1 colleges. She's got a lot of successful gymnastics coaching along with gymnastics herself, and I'm excited to have you here to share your experience. Welcome to the show, Jessie.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I always enjoy getting a chance to talk to a coach who has a reputation as a good coach, but not just a winning coach, a good coach who coaches the humans. So I'd love to, before we dive too far into that, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background as an athlete and kind of what brought you to coaching.
Well, from the very beginning, I started gymnastics in Florida when my family lived there. I went to a gym called Brown's Winter Park. I don't know what it is now, but it was a super small gym. My family relocated to Utah when I was 9, and I just so happened to move to the city where Olympus Gymnastics was. And that's where I, you know, started up again and stayed there for all my club years. After that, went to Utah for 4 years. I loved my experience there, had the best 4 years of my life, like they say, and kind of like got backed into a corner with my job after college, like wasn't sure what I was going to do. I kind of needed I was like, oh, I'll just start coaching to make money and then figure it out. I did not want to coach team. Coached at a club up near where I lived by the university. And when I got the job, I was like, I do not want to coach team. I'll coach rec, I'll do camps, I'll help, but I don't want to get into it too far. And they desperately needed a level 5 coach. And that's where I got the bug. I was able to coach some really, really, at the time I didn't realize like how great of a team it was, but ended up coaching Missy Marlowe's daughter, Milan Clausey. She was like 8. And then another girl, Haley Hoffman, who ended up at Stanford doing gymnastics. So, I mean, kids that like actually ended up moving forward in the sport as far as you can go, you know, for the most part. And I loved it. I just was like, wow, this is fun. Like, you know, you help out the girls and they go shine on the competition floor. And after a year, I just was like, you know what, I should go back and coach at Olympus. I love Olympus. It has, you know, my whole heart. And that's where I've been since 2009.
Awesome. And now if we can go back to your gymnastics career for just a minute, mm-hmm. I'd love to know what kind of coaching brought out the best in you.
I think no matter how, you know, hard the coach was on me or someone who maybe was an assistant who was more of like the assist, you know, helper coach, it was just someone who I knew believed in me. And that's hard to, you know, describe, but I feel like most of my coaches, I mean, all of them, I didn't have one coach who I feel like didn't believe in me and didn't, you know, reward my efforts. I think that's the most important thing, is for a kid to feel that. And sometimes that's hard. Sometimes you can work as hard as you can to get a kid to believe in themselves, or, you know, and then it just takes so much longer for whatever reason in them that they just need a longer time to trust themselves and to trust you. But I feel like I just trust pretty easily. And all of my coaches back in Florida, my first coaches at Olympus, and all the way through college too, just like knowing that they believed in my efforts and that whatever happened after that, you know, was what it was. I think that was the best coaching for me, and that's what it was. I mean, I really didn't have a bad experience, which is really lucky.
You know, isn't it unfortunate that sort of, I've heard many athletes, like I just talked to Danusha Francis, and she was like, I feel kind of bad. I just had really nice coaches. I feel it's almost like survivor's guilt in our sport if you have a nice coaching experience.
Yeah. And I mean, I wouldn't say it was easy. I definitely was coached out of maybe the old school method, but it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me. I knew the expectations. I was a very obedient kid, which I think it now that I coach is so, so rare that a kid just doesn't question things. And it's good to question things. Like, I wish I did a little bit, but it didn't bother me, the demands that were put on me. And I felt comfortable in, you know, the tough environment that it was. And I'm thankful that, you know, my mindset was okay enough to get through it. And I mean, I'm sure I could talk about some of the negative, but I just, overall, I'm super thankful. I'm super thankful for all of my coaches and all the experiences that I had all through my career.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, a lot of sort of the quote unquote old school coaching really praised mental toughness. And I'm going to use the word compliance, but it's sort of, you know, the kid who just says, sir, yes, sir, and gets up and does their job. And I think that's something that, yeah, it's great to have. And where do you think that source of mental toughness came from in you that allowed you to sort of not take it on personally? Or, you know, what was the superpower that allowed you to find the gratitude and sort of thrive in that tough environment?
I definitely feel like I was raised to be grateful and to understand that I was a gymnast. I did gymnastics. It didn't define me. There, I had other things in my life that were important, although gymnastics, you know, was very, very high up there. And I think having the parent support, honestly, my parents knew nothing about gymnastics till the day I was done with gymnastics. My dad would ask how my kips were going. Like they didn't know anything about it. And when I'd have a bad day, they'd just come home. You know, I didn't say much, but when I did have a bad day, I was able to freely express myself, and they'd just be like, you know what, tomorrow's going to be better. They didn't put anything on it. They didn't blame. They didn't, you know. I think the only time they ever got upset was when I did get kicked out of gym once, and they were just like, I was mad at my coach, you know, blaming it on my coach. And they were just like, you know, you need to change your attitude. You need to have a better attitude about this. And that floored me. I thought that they would be on my side. This was when I was 17, you know, I probably for once in my life stood up for myself and talked back. And my parents were on my coach's side, like, no, you need to do what you know, your do your assignments, do what you've been told. You don't have that much longer there. You know, so I think just my parents not putting a lot on the bad days. You know, if I did come home and talk about a coach, they would just be like, you know what, they probably had a bad day. That probably had nothing to do with you. You know. And that's kind of how I am now too. Like, you know, if a parent complains or if, you know, anything like that, I'm just like, they just need to be heard. You know, they love their kid, and they just needed to talk to me. And that's, you know, I'm sure life is hard sometimes, and you just got to support people. And yeah, I was super lucky in that regard where my family didn't make my career a big deal. It was just they were just like, you're so lucky to be doing this and that you have a great time and experience, and we'll do anything to support you. But I think that is so important.
Yeah. Well, and to have that unconditional love and support, that gymnastics is not who you are, it's what you do. And then it sounds like they gave you kind of a big picture perspective on the gratitude, your part in situations that are challenging, which I think is such a gift at it as a teenager to go, okay, this part's mine in this disagreement, and I'm gonna own it. Even if it's only 5% of the actual thing, this is the part I'm going to own. I'm going to find my gratitude. I'm going to do what's within my control. And then we're going to let go of the things that are outside of our control. It seems like that's kind of where they were coaching you through life along those lines, which.
Yeah, I mean, like, good day, bad day. There was never like a huge emphasis. It was just like, great job. And then moving on to whatever we had going on that day. Or, you know what? It's one bad day. It'll be better tomorrow. Your coach probably not having the best day themselves, and I'm sure tomorrow it'll be a lot better, you know? So I'm definitely lucky that I had that experience, as far as my family support.
Yeah, I mean, it makes such a huge difference. And the fact that they were so hands-off, I think, can
Oh,
be
yeah.
really helpful. That they just
Yes.
feed you and hug you and help you find the life lessons, and that's what they do. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, now, so we talked about what worked best for you, which is finding coaches that really believed in you. And even it sounds to me like, and you had the perspective of finding that belief in them beneath their mm-hmm. words sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's usually if coaches are, you know, going off on a kid, it's, there's this typically this root of, I know what you're capable of. Mm-hmm. And I want that for you. It's just the words can sometimes come out and be hurtful or painful. What kind of coaching works best? So you've been doing this a long time, and I'm sure you've done it a certain way and changed and adapted. I know you're the kind of person who's always learning, but if you had to say what type of coaching works best for the athletes that you coach today, what is it? Hey guys, quick announcement break. Right now, we at Complete Performance Coaching are looking for 5 athletes who are ready to break through their mental blocks for good. If that sounds like you or your child, then sign up for a free consultation call with one of my amazing coaches as soon as possible to see if you're a good fit for our Perform Happy Elite training program. This program includes one-on-one coaching with the world's top mental performance coaches, plus tons of support for athletes and their parents in between sessions. You can sign up today at completeperformancecoaching.com/consult. Talk to you soon.
I think giving them a lot of choices and holding, you know, they know the expectation. They know what they're there to do, but also, you know, some kids aren't going to always do exactly what you say, and kind of giving them choices. Here's the assignment. I don't, you know, I need this done. And, please, you know, clearly there's, you know, like your series, this and this and this is the most important part, but not even having to say that, they just know. And hopefully they make the best decisions. And I kind of allow them to figure it out on their own until they really aren't doing what they're supposed to do. And I'm saying this as I coach level 8, 9s, and 10s. You know, I don't coach compulsories where kind of they all have to do it together to make sure kids do it or counting numbers correctly. But I coach, you know, kids who understand what their choices are. And some kids just think like, they're going to get away with not doing certain skills, or they think I'm not watching. You know, we have big groups and I'm very, I get distracted, you know, I get distracted. There's drills going on the floor, things going on up on the high beam, things going on in the low beam, kids over there in the pit doing dismounts, you know, like they're moving really fast. So I think certain kids just think they're avoiding, and they think that I don't know. And, you know, I kind of let them do that. And once, you know, once we start assignments, they're kind of seeing they're inconsistent compared to the rest. And I finally have to pull them over and say, you know what, you're not doing what you need to be doing every day. I'm giving you the same assignment as everyone else, and you don't do your series. I know you don't. Or if it's 5, you do 1 and then you stop. And if you want to be better, you need to do it. Like, I'm not going to make you do it, but you need to, like, you see what success is here. You see it. Working hard here is popular. It's a popular thing at our gym to work hard. If you're not, it's almost the peer pressure of not, you know, if you're not, then you're going to be called out by your teammate. And so you see what is success. And if you don't want to do that, great. Good for you. Like, you're going to be the one that's suffering from this, but I really know that you can. I know that you can. It's okay if you fall. You know, setting an expectation, but also giving them room to make mistakes, whether it's choices or just falling all the time, like falling on on assignments, not quite making the assignment, but doing their best to do it. You know, I give so much of that, and I feel like that is really helpful. They don't feel shame maybe in mistakes. They feel like they laugh at it. And I think that's what works best when I feel like I get the best response, is kind of empowering them to make, you know, you're going to do what you're going to do. And I'll help you along the way. I'll help you as much as I can, but you kind of need to figure it out on your own. And luckily we do have examples of, you know, hardworking kids who on paper are successful, or even not, you know, like even they might not on paper as far as scores be successful, but they're the hardest working kid in the gym and they get a lot of attention for that. And I think emphasizing the characteristics that you want, like rewarding effort and rewarding, hey, you know what? This kid, you are the best teammate. And I so much appreciate that. I don't know where that kid's going to go, but as far as like value on our team, like that's the most valuable thing, is for us to have any kid like that, whether they do well, like at a meet or not. That's, you know, encouraging that, encouraging, you know, all the things that you would want in to work with anyone. You know, I don't know if that answered your question, but.
Yeah. Well, it's something that I think is so important for parents, is to let kids fail. And I'm not saying that you're doing this, that you're letting kids fail, but there's so much value in natural consequences in life. Mm-hmm. And those are the ones that fuel internal motivation, is when you make a choice, you get a consequence, and then you get to make your next choice accordingly. And those consequences can be positive or negative. So if you make a choice to go hit 10 series, even though you're scared or even though it's hard, and you like summon all of your strength and you get up and you do it, that consequence is you feel relief, you feel confidence, you the next day you're fired up. Okay. Or you have the day where like your choices have led to you didn't get enough sleep and you didn't plan well for homework and you didn't eat the right lunch and you're not telling somebody that your foot hurts, and all those choices are leading to this avoidance that's then leading to less success, less confidence.
Less confidence is the main thing. It for me, it's like if they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, then they're going to feel it and they're just not going to get the ball rolling with where they need to be. And, you know, gymnastics is my life, but like at the end of the day, it's just gymnastics. Like they're just flipping around. We're just having a good old time with it. So, you know, to understand how to work through all of these things to gain confidence is just so important.
Yeah. And it also takes falling on your butt to get that fire lit, to get you out of your comfort zone, to ask for help, to start communicating, to start asking for what you need, because you can't be reading the minds of 15 athletes at once. You can't do it. It's not possible.
Yeah. It's hard too at the, you know, level 9 and 10, they're dealing, you know, it's a lot of management of injury to, like, you know, their body's hurting, they're sore, they have finals, they were sick last week, and how do I, you know, or I, a lot this year is, you know, my kid's scared if they miss gym, they're not going to be able to compete this week. And I keep saying it's about safety. It's not like a rigid rule where if they miss, like they will not compete. It's, we want them to be safe at the meet. And sometimes if you're sick for so long and you don't train, your endurance isn't going to be good. And competing would just make things worse, but it's just like, you know, they just want to, they want to follow the rules, but it's, I don't know. They just care so much.
Yeah. And life happens. And
yeah. Life happens.
Resilience is the hallmark of a champion more than perfection. It's like it's the kid who just keeps getting back up and keeps trying again. But something that you've talked about when we've talked before is about the power of communication and the importance of communication and collaboration. And I love how you go, okay, this is what I'm setting out for you. This is the expectation. And you get choices how you want to attack this or what you've got today. Sometimes somebody's 100% isn't 100% today. And they can go and do what they need to do. And you're not going to shame them. You're not going to chastise them. You're not going to punish them. You sort of just let that all take its course. But how does communication play a role in your athlete relationships in your gym?
I think it's everything. I think it's the only way to, I know how to do it. As far as, you know, building a relationship with them, knowing who they are outside of the gym, knowing about their family, asking them personal questions as much as possible while we're working, and them knowing about you too, as much as that's appropriate. I think it starts there, and then them understanding like, hey, I jam my foot on this, like on a couple vaults, it hurts to do my back tuck on beam and my beam dismount. Is there any way I can take that out today? Or them knowing like the days that are important, like the routine days, they know maybe they need to push through. It's safe to push through, but it hurts. And I really need to do floor today, like my floor routine. So I'm going to ask Jess, like I've tried to teach them, and I know they still struggle with it, to come up to me and say, hey, can I do 3 routines with everything and then take this out because it hurts? Sure. I rarely say no. I rarely say no unless, hey, we have a meet in 2 weeks. You've never done a full routine. I'm just saying that. I'm letting you know that like you need to do a few routines before we do it. To be safe, and you can do that today, you can do that tomorrow and Thursday, or like giving him choices that way. Like, you know, and not every kid is going to do every single number, you know, it's just not realistic. So that making them comfortable with, talking to me. You know, the worst thing I'm going to say is, no, you need to do half numbers, or I really rarely say no. There are times that I do watch a kid be kind of passive aggressive about something. Either I can tell they're sick, or, and I've talked to them several times. Hey, you know what? If your ankle hurts, if it's something I know that will not hurt them in the long run, if it's like a hamstring, no. If it's, you know, a back, no. But if they've jammed their foot and it's been looked at and it just hurts, like it's not going to make it worse. And I've talked to them several times. I'll just sit there and watch. Like, are they going to do this passive aggressive thing all day where they fall off the beam and make a face? And, you know, about halfway in, I'll tell one of the teammates, the older teammates, like, you know what, maybe you should, can you go talk to this girl and tell her she's very welcome to come talk to me? You know, or I'll go up to them and say, hey, you can be done. No, I'm fine. Okay, then no more faces. We're not going to do the faces. If your foot's not hurting, you don't need to limp. But I feel that your foot's hurting. And so maybe we need to be done for the day. You can go down and do like some basics on the line beam. You can do dance throughs. You can go do some core conditioning, whatever. But like sometimes I let them, because I'm just like, I've told them a million times that they can come talk to me, and I appreciate the toughness. At the end of the day, I appreciate that, because that doesn't come, you know, along all the time. You know, a lot of kids aren't going to try to push through it. So I admire that, but I also need you to be competing, and I don't want you to be hurting. So, kind of allowing for that, please come talk to me. Or they'll say, hey, can I have a lot of kids that just with series on beam, they're my older, you know, level 10s. They've had a flick lay for since they were 10, you know, they do three a day, you know, on some days they do one, and it's usually doesn't affect them, but it will, they won't finish a season if they do more than that. Other kids can do a million and it just doesn't. So kind of having that understanding, if they don't abuse the rule, like sometimes a kid will, again, they'll make a bad, like not a bad choice, but a choice where they're skipping things in their routine. And I'll say, I wouldn't put it past me that I'd forget, but hey, you know, what's up? Why aren't we doing dismounts? You know, you didn't do any today. Oh, well, like this is, my wrist is hurting. And I'm like, you need to talk to me. You need to come talk to me. You don't just take things out. I appreciate that you're not working through pain, but that's the hardest skill for you. And, you know, maybe we can go to the tramp and do some to a stick or do something else, but, you know, don't just take it out. So them learning that, and that I do see that, like, I usually don't, you know, miss that stuff. So just them being comfortable talking to me and understanding I'm not going to be mad. I might be frustrated. I might be not at you, but with the situation, but I try not to show that. I try to go like, it's fine. You know, not a big deal. It's just one day, you know, back to like that. It is just one day. It's just one day where we're not doing it. Or if it's 1 week, we don't have a meet this week. It's fine if we rest. So yeah, that's, communication is the only way I know how. Like, I, the more information I know, the better. And I encourage people to do that as they coach, and gymnasts need to do that. That all they can do is try. Like, all they can do is ask.
Yeah. So that's probably the one thing I teach most kids who are struggling with fear, is that you have to speak. You have to. And I think they go from this place of, well, I don't know. I don't know what I need. I don't know what's wrong. And coach says, what's wrong? They say, I don't know. And so this communication kind of wall gets built, and the kid goes, I don't know what to say. I don't know what I need. I just know I can't. And then coaches who are frustrated are like, well, why can't you? I don't know how to help you if you don't talk to me. So how do you help someone in a situation like that, where they're obviously scared? They don't know why or what is happening. What are some suggestions you can give coaches and maybe athletes too, of how to create a constructive moment of conversation when that's happening?
I would just move them down, like to a lower beam, or go to the tramp, or I know even mid-season, like I would do that. I would try to avoid that. As far as in your gym, not if you see it, we have, you know, it's kind of an unwritten rule, but a kid that's standing there up on the beam, just standing, trying to do something, it's not that it's not allowed, but like, hey, go back down to low, make five, like not the end of the world. It sucks. It sucks. Like that they've made all this progress and then they have to go, for them, they have to go back down, but it's a waste of time to stand up on the high beam. It's a waste of time for you. It's a waste of time for the team who is trying to get a turn up there. So from the beginning, from compulsory, we kind of have a rule where, you know, if they're up on the beam, or it's usually beam, you know, it's usually beam, sometimes bars. But it's, you know, hey, let's go back down. You know, we have this many weeks till we need to start routines. Let's come up with a plan. You know, let's do this many a day, and then let's do, come up to this beam that day, and then let's do one on high beam that week. And then let's, or hey, pick a day. I need you to pick a day. Let's look at the calendar in the next 3 weeks where you're going to try it on high. Not do the thing that sometimes they're scared about is the whole assignment. They're fine doing one, but they don't want to do the five in a row, or they think like, if I get it, then I'm going to have to, it's like, yeah, you're going to have to try to do that skill. You're going to have to try to make the assignment because it's the assignment and that's how you get consistent. But, you know, just, you might have to individualize the plan. You know, you might have to say, you know, for this kid, them just doing it is great. I wish that they were doing all the numbers, but you know, it is what it is. And maybe they don't compete that event. Maybe they don't, you know, and they, you know, our girls know like they need to be doing the full, trying for the full assignment for 2 weeks in advance. And if it's safe, they compete. If they haven't even been doing it, which is fine, they can't. But I would just say, as far as like the coach, I wouldn't allow them to stand up on the high beam and just stand there. I would bring them back down where the kid feels safe, do twice as many numbers down there if their body allows it. And you know, doing that for a while, but trying to avoid it from the beginning, you know, trying to avoid that in your gym from the beginning, to not allow, you know, if they're scared, they're scared, move them back down. I do have a couple of kids, that struggle. I have a level 10 that struggles, has struggled daily since level 5, just every day is a battle, like for her. And we've gotten into it, you know, we've had our times. I kind of learned like, she's going to do what she's going to do. And I kind of had to be like, for a while, I need you to do 5 series before the next meet, you know, put something on it, not the same as everyone else. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, try to build it. But even if she's there, like last minute of practice, the day before the meet doing 5, she did what I asked. It's not ideal. I don't like it. I don't, you know, love that I'm going to go into a meet and she might make it, she might not. But she's gotten so much better, and she's finally just feeling a lot better about herself and doing well in competition. And it's so fun to watch how, and again, every day is hard. Every single day is hard for her on beam. She comes to beam, she's nervous, but she's, you know, figured out a way to get it done. She uses her teammates, asks certain teammates to, you know, watch it, you know, asks, hey, can you watch this or whatever, but she's figuring out a way. And I couldn't have imagined it. I just thought, oh, we'll never be good on beam if we compete it. And now she's a solid all-rounder. It's super fun to watch.
I love that. I think that can give a lot of hope to the little five, the level 5 who is struggling with getting, you know, going backwards on beam. It's like Sam Peschek and Kyla Ross, both of them got stuck on beam with fear in level 5. And
yeah,
Sam Peschek was scared her whole career on beam. And yet she's the one who goes to the Olympics on beam because she did so many numbers, backing it up, just like you said.
Yeah.
And that's the key. And I think you keep it pretty low drama. That's what I'm always encouraging, is that it's just math. You just mm-hmm. need to get enough confidence in the piggy bank that it's mm-hmm. going to click and it's going to work. And you either do that by 50 on the low beam or 30 on the medium beam or all of it together. And like, it's, you're going to get to the place where it's going to click, but you just got to do what you can and get a win. And if your win today is 3 on low beam, okay, it's better than standing around balking on high beam and just, you know, devouring, like killing your confidence basically by standing there feeling hopeless.
Yeah. And I really respect the coaches that are super rigid about their assignments. Like, I wish I was a perfectionist because I'd be a way better coach, but I see just some coaches like, you know, I'm not going to allow them to compete because it's not good yet. I appreciate that. I appreciate coaches that are like that, but I'm also like, like not every kid is going to fit into what you think, you know, in January or February, where they need to be right now. It's just not going to happen. I'm sorry, but like not every kid is going to be that way. And it just, for me, I'm fine individualizing it. They don't want to be doing it. They don't want to be different than the other girls at all. They want to be doing it. They don't come to gym wanting to have this bad day. So it's just, or not even bad day, but struggle. So just making it okay. There are times that I do get upset, but it's mainly about like, you know, you're crying, you're not throwing a fit, but just like anytime you fall, not even on your series, like the attitude, I don't love that. Like, we're not going to do that. If you don't do your series, whatever, but don't bring the rest of your day down or the rest of the group down because you're having a bad day, you know, and that no one's perfect. So I don't expect everyone to have a good day all the time, but just teaching them like, how am I going to respond to this? You know, and sometimes she'll come to me, it's usually a Monday, and she'll be like, I know I'm not going to do it today. And I'll be like, okay, go to the road beam, go to the laser beam, do five. I need a good day tomorrow. She's old enough now. I need a good day tomorrow. Let's do it tomorrow. Okay. And then if she does, not the end of the world if a Monday was bad.
To have the collaboration. And I think you say, you know, you'd be a better coach if you were more of a perfectionist. But it depends on how you define success, really. Because if that girl who gets to be a level 10, who can come to you and be honest, can have a great season as a result of all of your individualizing and of you saying yes more often and you not expecting and demanding robots, if that girl gets to have that success as a result, I don't think you could be a better coach. You know, it sounds like you nailed it.
I'm trying. Yeah. It's hard. It's hard to do that. It's hard to go outside of the box. It's hard to you know, when you have tons of kids, it's hard to individualize it, but I'm fine to do it if they meet me halfway.
Yes. And I think that's the key. It's like a lot of the time, you know, coaches will put it all on the kid or the kid will put it all on the coaches, but it is, it has to be a collaboration. It has to be so that everybody can keep the drama low, just focus on what's possible, get those wins. And then you're climbing a mountain sometimes for 6 or 12 months, but then you or 5 years, but then you get to the place where like that girl didn't give up. Mm-hmm. She didn't give up. And that to me is so impressive. I see parents were like, she's still struggling and it's been 5 years. And I'm like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. What an amazing kid you have raised that has not given up. Yeah, although it hasn't been smooth. And she's not a robot. None of them are robots. So we can't expect, you know, these little robo gymnasts.
Yeah.
They're kids. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I would love to chat just a little bit before we wrap up on how you continue to improve year over year. Cause I know that's something that I really am drawn to about you is your humility, where you go, I'm not an expert and I don't want to sound like I know everything and I'm still learning. And that's incredible because you have so much experience. So what are some things that you as a coaching staff or as a facility are doing to continue to improve, or even you personally, year over year?
I think as a group, it's usually end of season and we go, what were the good things and what were the not so good things? And trying to implement just small, I used to think like, oh, I need to like change everything about like this gym does everything right. And I don't, you know, I visited a couple gyms and, you know, thankfully the coaches allowed me to come watch and I just was like, you know, we're never going to be like that. We're never going to be like that. So trusting what you do as a base, I think as long as it's, you know, a good base or whatever, you have to start somewhere. And then just, you know, I think a few years ago, I just thought our flexibility isn't great or our it still isn't awesome, but our leaps, like we don't, you know, we get to level 9 and they take forever to get a a sea to sea leap pass. How can we make, how can we figure out a way where that doesn't happen? So starting, you know, it, this isn't rocket science. It's just, you know, you figure it out by, you know, in level six, when we do our verification, we need to make sure they can do a progression on the tramp for a switch side, switch half, torsjeté, and like a popa or a wolf full, like they know how to do all of them. And then each level, they have a verification to kind of build that. And it's not even really for the kid. It's for the coach to be accountable to teach that. That helped a lot. Things, small things like that, that aren't that hard to implement, or we really need to work on our artistry. You know, twice a week last year, I was just like, you know what? I hate spending time during, I love coaching tumbling. I love, it's like the best thing ever. It's so much fun, but I don't love working dance. Like it's fine, but, I don't, it's not my favorite. And so I implemented two days of warm up, just in our open warm up with all the levels, just like dance across the floor and expression and the kids coming up with dances. And, you know, it was something small where those days we weren't really doing a big warm up anyway. Like Friday, we were playing a game to warm up, and Wednesday, we were like, it wasn't like a plyo warm up or like a cardio warm up. It was just something where I'm like, you know what? This is our game, you know, like, and I don't really have to do it during my, workout time, and the kids think it's the best thing ever. So just like small things are like, hey, I don't feel our shapes on bars. That's normally our best thing. I didn't feel like this year we stood out in that way. I think we can do more. What can you do on bars like daily to help those shapes, you know, coming together as a group and being like, this is what needs to be better, and all buying into it and all, making sure that those things happen. And just small things. I think, I don't know if anyone's read Atomic Habits, but just like the smallest thing daily can go such a long way, either up or down. So it's like, if kids are getting to beam and we have a whole stretching, they stretch for 4 to 5 minutes, stretch, kicks, you know, it's not that much, but if they're doing it wrong, it's just going to go, if they're doing it even a little bit wrong, if they're kicking back and they're bending their leg, guess what their switch leap is going to look like. So just like making sure that if you are doing small things each day, it goes in the right direction. So just adding that. And I feel like as a personally or individually as a coach, just making sure that I'm well enough, like mentally and everything, to be calm and do the best job I can, and coming in with a purpose and a plan, making sure my assignments are set, making sure I know what's going to happen that day. Maybe I'm not feeling great or having a hard time at home, not bringing that into the gym the best way possible. We all have bad days, but doing that, I think I started reading books. Tabitha Yim gave me this book a long time. It was, had to have been like almost 10 years ago. She told me to read Mindset by Carol Dweck, I think. And it changed, like, she just was like, I think you need to read this, you know? Yeah. And then I read it and it changed, you know, the way everything. And then I just started reading, you know, not all the time, but I read this book called Grit, called by Angela Duckworth, I believe. That book honestly changed my life and how I look at kids and talent, and talent and effort, and really what I'm going to focus on as a coach. And I do think as a young coach, I focused on talent a lot, and it's exciting, but it's like, that kid's four. I have no idea. Like, I have a 4-year-old. I every day she's something different. You know, there are the rare, it is the rare kid that can be that focused at a young age and make it all the way through. But I think just making sure the kids are love gymnastics and kind of hoping that you correct it all and you try to be the best technical coach there is from rec up, but also like to keep our jobs, we need to keep kids in the gym, and to keep kids in the gym, we need to make sure that they're happy and loving what they're doing. So I think that's the most important thing, is getting them from a very young age just to love being in the gym. And then, you know, it'll be what it will be. And a lot of parents just like, you know, they're not getting this, they're not getting this. And I'm just like, they're so young. And really, like, I'll do a private lesson with the younger, you know, lower level kid, and the parents just so worried about the progress. And I'm like, I see it every week. I only see him once a week, once a month. I'm like, I see it. And it might be in their confidence, it might be in their skill, but just trusting that it will get better over time. No gym is perfect. No coaching staff is perfect. I feel like there's a lot of turnover, especially in like the lower levels, which is really hard. But finding people that first will treat the kids really well and, you know, hold them accountable for what you're asking them to do, which is really hard to do with young kids. I'm not good at it. I'm not good with the younger kids because I give them choices and they're like, they walk all over me. But I think just finding people that really do treat the kids well, and then train your staff as technically sound as you can. But also there, you need to learn as a young coach, like, or a new coach, like, what works. And you're not going to find out in a month or a year. It's going to be like years and year, every year passes and you figure it out. You can't learn it in 1 year or think one drill is going to help. Do the drill for 6 months and see if it helps. Do the drill, and then if it doesn't, change it, but don't think one thing is going to, you know, change something right away.
Yeah. Gosh, so many nuggets for any coaches out there. I'm sure this was so valuable. And also for parents, just to see what the experience is of, you know, being a coach and having those tough situations where, you know, someone's out sick or there has to be a decision made, or are we competing? Are we not? I think it's really important to kind of give that window in. And I really appreciate how you clearly put the humans first without sacrificing the excellence. And I think that's, you know, what I really, really appreciate about you is that we can demonstrate that you can coach excellence and coach humans and allow kids to be happy all in one, you know, amorphous blob of attempts where, you know, everybody's trying, everybody's human, but I think you're doing a great job. So thank you so much. Thanks. for being with me today and for sharing your experience. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Perform Happy podcast. If you're ready to unlock your maximum sport potential, head over to performhappy.com and join us. You'll be training alongside world champion athletes and Olympic hopefuls. And I will personally take you through my research-based system for overcoming fear and mental blocks, building confidence, and finding your flow. I'm Coach Rebecca Smith, and I'll see you next time.